Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Solar Channel, Sports in Depth is the show. It is a special show tonight as we will remember two of the legendary giants of our time. But as opening, we always open up with John Coltrane, a prayer. Dear Lord, we thank you for another evening. Thank you for another day. We thank you for the likes of Angelo Day and Don Good. We thank you for the little things we so largely take for granted. And we ask the Lord that not so much you give us what we want, give us what we need. And it's you that we need all the time. Thank you for your daughter, Jesus, that died, that we have the right to the tree of life. But more importantly, Lord, that your way be our way. We ask that you bless the families of Angelo and Don Kanish and other people that we don't know as well. But we just ask you to go in there and soothe them and heal them. We had Angelo for such a long, long time. What a blessing he was to the game. And he was a champion, not only in the sweet science, but the game of life. We ask you to bless us, all those blessings. Amen, your darling son, Jesus Christ. Amen. Doc Stanley, Sports and Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul, the channel, Sports and Depth is the show. It is a tribute. Angelo Dundee and Don Kinnear from Soul Train. And, you know, it's ironic. And, you know, you get numbers and you put them on the side. And then, you know, this happened. And nobody could be more apropos to speak about Angelo than the man who wrote the book, Angelo. I remember Burt Sugar, the legendary Burt Sugar, historian, boxing Hall of Famer, deaf man, you know, deaf dresser. And I remember when I got the book from Burt, and Burt autographed the book for me, and I got Leroy Neiman to autograph the book because Leroy had done the cover drawing, and I said, "Dang, I need Angelo." And there was a fight down in AC, and I took the book down there with me. And sure enough, like, out of the puff, in fact, he was talking to Bert. Angelo comes into the press room. "Hey, Angelo, how you doing? Signed the book for me." And I remember the autographs, and ironically, they both signed in brown. And he signed the book for me. And then, unlike Angelo, he was gone. It was like if he just showed up to sign the book for me. 90 years old, Ali. Well, Bert, you know, we're going to start it with you. Nobody knew him better. And, you know, when you talk about Angelo, Bert, you have to talk about Muhammad Ali.
Well, you do, but you also have to mention the fact he had 15 champions. It could have been as many as 25 if we try to figure out who these people were that the alphabet soups basically had as champions. But Angelo was such a wonderful ambassador for the sport. As you said, he was there when you needed him, and then he probably went off for somebody else who needed him. That's all.
You talked last night because, like I said, we brought you in not only because of what you mean to us, but, you know, you got the call last night from Angelo's son, and you knew right away something was wrong, Bert.
Yeah, well, first of all, how many people hit 90, and then you get a call from his son, Jimmy Dundee, and I just knew it. I could hear it in his voice that this man I'd written a book with and known for over half a century was gone. And it wasn't just Ali, Sugar Ray Leonard. It wasn't just Ali and Leonard. It was George Foreman. It wasn't Ali and Leonard and Foreman. Angelo went all the way back to Carmen Basilio in the 50s. I mean, that's a time span that's mind-boggling, and he was there for all of us all the time.
Willie Pastrana, I believe that was the guy.
Yeah, that was his first champion.
First champion, that was the guy that they talked about, the legendary phone call that he made to the hotel room. It was Willie's room, and he wound up talking. What now, the book, My View from the Corner, Life in Boxing. How'd you come up with that title, Bert?
Well, in part it was Angelo's idea, in part mine, and in part the editor of Doubleday. Mm-hmm. But Angelo had such a brilliant career, and at the end was an ambassador for the sport, that we thought, and noticed the cover had Leroy Neiman's painting, mm-hmm. but with Ali, but we figured that Angelo had so much to tell, and did. and it was wonderful to talk to him, be with him. I mean, for instance, did you know that that he basically supplied some of the rhyming for Ali's poems?
No.
You know, this might shock and amaze you, but I'm gonna whoop Joe Frazier. Well, you can hear Angelo in there. No, he didn't write the shortest poem according to Guinness in the World, written by Ali, which was Me, M-E, We, W-H-E-E. There's not a lot of room for them maneuvering there. But Angelo handled all of his fighters with a respect that they returned. And in the photo of great trainers throughout history, back to Jimmy DeForest and others, Angelo will be seated there front and center because he was that great.
Mm. Doc Stanley Sports Lab. Did Tim Smith, Tim, did you get in with us yet? We got Tim to join us. Harold Weston, are you here?
Yes, I am.
Harold. There you go.
Fred, how you feeling, buddy?
Oh, I'm getting better. You know, you look like a telephone from here, but I can see that you... I can see you're smiling.
Well, let me say this, Bert. You're still my man. You know how to go about it and deliver a message like you have to deliver it.
Well, you know, I love the sport. I'm an advocate for boxing. I'm not an apologist. But for years, I've defended it against everyone. I remember arguing with the American Medical Association that boxing should be banned. And I'm telling them there are concussions in football. This is 25 years ago. They tell me no. They have helmets. What the hell are we reading in the papers today? Concussions in football.
Yeah. Well, Bert, that's one thing I love about you, because your respect of being straightforward like me, and I succumb, I respected you because everything about you, and we talked and we had a couple of few drinks to say what we had in our mind and how we looked at things and how we what to think about it.
Oh, no, you were one of the straight shooters, Harold, still are, and you look for people like that, and you don't find them in many fields, particularly in boxing.
Right, right.
But we stood up and we stood our position and we stood for what we believed. And we still do.
We still do.
And Angelo Dundee was one of those.
Yeah, he was. You know what, Bert? The thing is, and me and you know about, and we're about the last few that's in the real world of boxing. The real world of boxing.
Well, you know who I talked to this morning after Angelo's passing last night?
What?
Michael Gerard Tyson called me.
Really?
Yeah, we did, because he's an historian. And if you don't know that, you don't know him.
Mm-hmm,
we just talked to Angelo. And even though he never had anything to do with Angelo, he revered him. And that's how Angelo Dundee was in the world of boxing. Nobody had a bad word ever to say about Angelo.
No, you're right. And I mean, you know, when I realized that I could fight, when I fought one of Angelo's fighters, Rafael Rodriguez, and the kid was like 27-1, and when I beat the guy, and Angelo came into my locker, into my room, and he just said, "I need to just shake your hand." He said, "I have never, ever seen anybody beat my kid like that before." He said, "You are a great fighter." And that's when I realized I can fight.
Well, also, you realize that this man was a no BS man.
Right. He was. Him and Gil was that kind of people. They did not bull jive you. I mean, it was what it was. I mean, that's the way those guys were. But he came into my locker room after the fight. I mean, I hadn't even undressed.
I want to know.
And he came in my room.
No, Angelo, for all his career, was one of the nicest people I ever met. Yes, I wrote a book with him called My View from the Corner. But he also continued as an ambassador, ambassador for the sport.
Yeah, yeah. He was for real. I mean, him and Gil, I mean, Angelo had that whole scenario. I mean, I don't know nobody in the boxing world. They might mislike me and you, you know what I'm saying, but... They never, nobody, have never heard nobody said they did not like Angelo Dundee.
You couldn't. You literally couldn't.
You're right. It's amazing. It's amazing. In this business, it's amazing.
And you know, he was such a sweetheart.
Mm.
Had going back to Carmen Basilio, his first champion.
Right.
Think about
right.
it. Carmen Basilio? That's another world.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Basilio is one of the guys who happens to be Doc Stanley, Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soldier Channel, Sports Network of the show. It is our kickoff of our Black History Month, and wow, we've got the legendary Burt Sugar, the legend Howard Weston Jr., first ever African-American matchmaker at Madison Square Garden. I should have the Sea Wings get in. You join us here, Sea Wings?
Sea Wings is here. Good evening, panel.
Lady A, are you here with us? We're looking for her to join us here. Gentlemen, we've got Burt Sugar, we've got Howard Weston Jr., the book, which I am so proud of, My View from the Corner, A Life in Boxing, Angelo Dundee with Burt Randolph Sugar, forwarded by Muhammad Ali, and I'm proud of your autograph to Doc. Hard as a rock, keep punching Angelo Dundee, and then in the same brown ink, to Doc, Best Burt Sugar 2004. Gentlemen, you talk about Angelo, and you look at how he kept it. Guy is originally from Philly, you know, changed his last name. Now Burt, his brother, a lot like Duva, was the propeller that pushed him into boxing, Burt?
Yes. His brother Chris, who's also a member of the Boxing Hall of Fame, was a promoter out of Miami Beach.
Mm-hmm.
And he sort of put his little brother in the business. And from the time he wrapped Carmen Basilio's hands. And Basilio said, that's it. And that was his first champion. He was part of boxing.
Yeah.
And long after Ali, and long after Sugar Ray Leonard, and long after George Foreman in his comeback, he remained our ambassador to the world, and that was Angelo Dundee.
Yeah. Let me say this, fellas. Angelo was so respected by so the people around the world that when Muhammad Ali turned Muslim, okay, Angelo, with everybody else being eliminated from Ali's camp, his
mm-hmm.
investors and everything, all right, because it was that white situation, black situation, Angelo was the only one left to deal with Ali.
Well, he and Gene Kilroy came to help Ali when Ali was defrocked for those 3.5 years. But Angie could get along
but,
with
but
anybody.
But I'm saying, he, you know, the Muslim let him stay.
No.
Angie
did not bother with personal things, whether it was
right,
Ali
and that's
or not.
What I'm saying.
You know,
nobody
Burt,
looked at
it's a funny thing you said that, and that was one of the things I read somebody that he said that Ali always said, Angelo always let me be me. And in your book,
right,
Angelo talked
right.
about, too, about the fact that, you know, he said, Ali always took care of me. Ali made it understood, no matter what religion, no matter what we're going to do, Angelo Dundee is my guy, and I remember he said he told DK, hey, DK, hey, don't mess with Angelo. And Angelo said, unlike Ray Charles Leonard, he said, Ali always took care. And you make a point. He talked about one time they were at an affair, and some of the guards from the nation were there, and he said they were making the atmosphere uneasy. And he said to Ali, he said, champ, you know, I think we kind of really don't need the guys today. And Ali said, you think so, Angelo? He says, yeah. And Ali told the guys, Philippe, you know, there was a bond between these two guys that was beyond just a fighter and a trainer. I mean, these were two guys who were sort of like destined to be each other. And there was Burt and then Howard, you can tell each other. There was admiration, respect, but these two guys love each other, Burt.
No question.
Well, you know, even at the forward, Howie says that he... that Angelo basically stepped away when it was his private life. He didn't get in the way of Ali or then Clay changing his name,
mm-hmm.
changing his religion, not stepping forward for the draft. Angelo had that very wonderful feel for what was happening. And that's how he dealt with Ali and Ali with him. The two of them were a tremendous team, two giants in their field, and that field was boxing.
Yeah.
Harold?
I, I agree 100%. I think that Angelo's like Gil. I mean, these guys were like psychiatrists. I mean, they just knew how to get into your head and knew what to say at the right time to make you click and make you be a better person than what you are. And Angelo understood what was happening in that era, that he said, I'm not going to get in between. I respect what you believe in. I understand what you want to do, and I'm just going to just deal with what I do, trainer. I train you, and that's all it requires. And that's what it all was about with Ali. And so basically, Angelo was always with Ali, and Ali respected Angelo, and Angelo respected Ali. But you know what? Angelo, as we look at this thing in life, he was one of the greatest trainers of all time. There's not that many great trainers in boxing, really. It's not that many. I mean,
well, when we remember great trainers, we remember one or two of the fighters they trained.
Right.
Angelo had 15, some say as high as 25 champions. That's a hell of a resume.
Mm-hmm.
and let's go back to what you guys talked about in the book, page 128. And Angelo says, Muhammad always stood up for me, by me, and with me. I never heard a bad word from him. And you talk about his conviction in the change, and he talks about the thing he had said. It was the same with Muhammad. You call him Muhammad Ali, or you lost a friend. Muhammad even had some heavy words with his idol, Sugar Ray Robinson, because Ray was reluctant to call him Muhammad. And they're talking about, you know, with Patterson. Gang, Bert Sugar's here, Harold Weston, with a tribute to Angelo Dundee, a guy who I met just a zillion times. He always treated like he were family. We know Bert Sugar's resume. We know Harold's resume. We're here to pay homage to him. We're also going to talk about Don Cornelius. As you know, he also passed away yesterday. Love, peace, and so you can best your last monies. And he's out of Chicago. But Lady A, I know you must have a question or two or some reflection. So we're going to let you kick ladies first. Bert Sugar's here. Harold Weston is here. Tim Smith should be calling in soon to join us. I'm looking for Mike Bellamy to join us also, who happened to be the first ever African-American quarterback in the history of Staten Island football. Lady A, take it away. Bert, have the panel, have your say, First Lady.
My reflection on him was I actually had a chance to meet Bert a couple of years ago at the International Boxing Hall of Fame. So hello, Bert. Nothing but a class when it comes to having the opportunity to actually meet you. But, you know, my reflections of Angelo were actually when I went up this last year in June to the International Boxing Hall of Fame, very receptive to the fans, as most boxers are. But also one of the things I got out of him was that, you know, you sit down and you talk to some of the guys. Harold kind of went and was kind of spoke a little bit about it earlier, which was that, you know, when it comes to trainers, he had a ridiculous resume. It was just like, and it's not just to say that these are guys that just, hey, you know what, he's just somebody I'm training. These are guys that actually were champions. You know, you look at a guy like Ray Leonard, you even take a step back and you listen to some of the things he would tell him in the corner. If I'm not mistaken, I believe the fight he had with Hearns, the first fight he had with Hearns, right, in the corner. You're blowing it. You're blowing it. And actually, if I'm not mistaken, it was in the later rounds, right? In that fight, when he said that.
It was
y'all jumping the gun. Now, let me say this, okay?
Go ahead, Harold.
Angelo was so smart, he called me up, okay? Him and Leonard called me up before they were getting ready to fight Tommy.
You were drawing a distance with Tommy.
Right, and they said to me, they asked me a question. They said, Harold, we need to talk to you. They said, can you tell us what was the hardest punch Tommy threw? And I said, I didn't feel his punch. It wasn't like he had a great punch to me. But I said he had a fast jab, and we were going over the details of, and Leonard and Angelo was
Angelo.
On the phone. We had a three-way call. And Angelo said, you know, how what was the hardest punch you really felt from? I said the straight right hand to the body. I said that was the only punch that I really felt that I said that you got to watch out for, because that will paralyze you. I said, but all the other punches is just, you know, it's no harder than the other guys I have been hit by. But I said, the other thing, he's got a quick left jab, a real whipping jab, and you got to be able to move your head. And Leonard said to me, and Angelo said to me, they said, we're going to move for the first five rounds. I said, if you do that, then you're going to lose the first five rounds. They said, we're not looking for the fight to go the distance. Those were their words. They already had a plan how they were going to do this thing.
Well,
and
you remember,
And they executed the way they did it.
Well, you remember between the 12th and 13th round, he said to Leonard, you're blowing it, son.
Right.
I think what happened in that fight, too, when Emmanuel said, because it was a fight that it just changed places. I mean, 1 minute Ray is running, and then next minute he's got Tommy on the run. But I think what we all saw, those who weren't deep into the sport, was that, you know, Tommy had been an outstanding amateur boxer, and we were surprised in a lot of ways to see that he was outboxing Ray. Emmanuel said he had told him, go back to the amateur. Tommy Hearns showed a lot of boxing skill in that fight, too, there, Bert.
Yeah, well, what happened was the puncher became the boxer, and the boxer became the puncher.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It just had all those ebbs and flows that make a great fight. And Tommy, of course, is being inducted into the Boxing Hall of Fame in June.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I, this weekend, was Goody Petronelli, the Hagler trainer, with Don Fulmer, Gene's younger brother, who was in the last fight ever,
mm-hmm.
on the Gillette Cavalcade of Sports, those Friday night fights. And
wow.
And Angelo all passing. It was not a good weekend for boxing. In fact, you wonder, in June, if this keeps up, if we can have our annual induction weekend for the Boxing Hall of Fame in a phone booth.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
we're
having a tribute here also to Don Cornelius, Harold Weston Jr., and Bert Sugar leading this move. Did Tim Smith call in yet? We're looking for Tim to join us. Mike Bellamy get with us yet? Okay, we're looking for the same list. Mel Cosell.
Mel Jr. is with you, Doc.
What's that?
I said Mel Jr. is joining.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're listening. We've got Bert here. I think you,
like,
did you get a chance to meet? Did you get a chance to meet Angelo at any time down at the garden there? Cosa? No?
Angelo, of course, the great Bert Sugar, of course, and, Harold Weston. Hey, Doc, I have a quick question for Bert and Harold, if I may just be brief. I wanted to know when that Ray Leonard, Tommy Hearns Rumble was announced, and especially you, Harold, since they went to you to kind of get advice about it, did you think that Ray would win a war of attrition with Tommy Hearns?
No, I picked Ray to beat Tommy. A lot of people thought I was being kind of upset because Tommy had
rooted against Tommy
fight.
Since he had beat you.
Right, it had nothing to do with that because I betted $5,000 on the fight, and I betted it with Ray because I knew Tommy didn't have the stamina like everybody thought he did. And I knew Emmanuel was in a different world with 15 rounds and going to his first fighter going to the world championship. That whole atmosphere, and Bert can tell you, when you go to that major, it ain't like it was before, but when you go to that major world championship back in the day, that was a championship. When you go on that platform, that was a real championship, and you got so much on your back as a trainer and your whole organization. And if your people don't understand it and know how to deal with it, you believe you're going to get beat in that situation. You lose so much energy just going to the ring before the even fight even starts, and that's the major part of it.
One of the things I was want to add, too, with that fight with Hearns and Leonard. One of the big things also was, Hearns was pulling his weight up until the last few rounds of that fight. So I think that it could have went either way up until, like, the tail end of that fight when Leonard just turned it on. You know what I mean?
Let me just say that.
Tommy was ahead in that fight on all scorecards.
Yeah.
But Tommy is one thing about it, is that when he gets tired, he is tired.
Oh, no, he winds up with spaghetti legs.
Yeah.
Well, Emmanuel said what had happened, too, that Tommy had inadvertently started listening to other people, had changed his diet. And when it came to those rounds that you talk about, how 13, 14, 15, the death rounds, Tommy had nothing in the tank.
I fought Tommy in the same area, Vegas, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Vegas is the altitude is low. If you don't know how to deal that and you come there 1 week before the fight, you're going to get tired in about the 56th round, okay?
Wow.
Tommy came there a week before the fight, just like he fought me. I was going to knock Tommy Hearns' butt out if he'd win another two more rounds.
Mm.
All right?
But remember, the fights in those days for championships were 15 rounds, not 12.
Mm-hmm,
and had that fight gone to a decision, in a 12-round fight, Tommy won. In fact, it was between the 12th and the 13th that Angelo said to Ray, "You're blowing it, son. You're blowing it."
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask a quick question though. If you take that situation and you move it to now, how much of that you think would have had to do with being hydrated, and doing a weigh in the same day, and how much of an impact do you think that would have on a fight if it was today?
Nothing.
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. I give you the fights in history, great ones, where 12 rounds would have determined that a Jersey Joe walkout would have beaten a Marciano, that a Billy Kahn would have beaten a Joe Lewis,
right.
Tommy Hearns would have beaten
Ray Leonard in 12 rounds. Right.
So it obviously has something to do with it. And some fighters are geared for the stamina and some for the short haul, that's all.
And Vito Antiferma would not be middleweight champion of the world.
Really? Why, Harold?
Because Vito was a 15-round fighter. Everybody got tired. Vito's strongest point was going down the next five rounds. Emil Griffin would have never won a lot of those titles that he won and been as great as he was as a welterweight and middleweight champion because of 15 rounds. As Bert can tell you, Griffin won every fight. When he got to the 10th round, from 11 to 15, Griffin won every round after that.
Oh, Emil.
Round was a monster, man.
Emil trained for that.
Right.
Emil, although he did lose his stomach for fighting and that killer instinct after the Perrette fight.
Oh, no question about it. I mean, Ray Robinson said the same thing, too, after he had, people forget it, Ray killed somebody, and Doc Stanley Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Solar Channel, Sports Network Show, and Ray said after that, he only fought good enough to win, which says a lot about these guys, because usually when a guy says that, he's kind of gone. For both those guys to become Hall of Fame fighters and, you know, world champions, I guess it says a lot about their sexual fortitude. Gentlemen, we've got Bert here, we've got Harold, guys who, like myself, knew Angelo. They knew him so much better. You got to have a question or two. We're paying tribute to Angelo Dundee. Also, we're going to talk a little bit about Don Kanish. Last year was the 40th anniversary of Soul Train. Came out of Chicago, 1972. The Jackson 5 debut with I Want You Back. 1973 was the first year that Stevie Wonder appeared on Soul Train. Love, Peace, and Soul was the closing line. We remember Don Kanish and the profound effect that he had.
I have a quick story.
Go ahead, Bert.
I once was in the company of Walter Payton, and I remember there was a kid, an 11 or 12-year-old kid on a Soul Train. I watched it. You won't give me bad points for watching Soul Train. And this 11 or 12-year-old kid from Mississippi was dancing on his hands.
Wow.
Well, now I'm with Walter Payton. And I've watched him play football, and if you remember, he had a tremendous balance and could hold himself up with one hand while still running. And I said, "You wouldn't have been on Soul Train once, would you?" And he said, "Yes." I said, "I saw you."
Wow.
Walter Payton, one of the greatest runners in the history of the National Football League.
All-time leading rusher, risen until
He was dancing on his hands.
Mm. You know, this is amazing. We've got Bert Sugar here, legendary boxing historian. We're talking about the late, great Don Caniz. The show is out of Chicago. In fact, the Chicago street where the pilot was taped is named after Don Caniz now. 71, he hosted the first nationally syndicated show. And you're telling us the greatest running back, well, one of the two greatest running back, Gale Sayers, the other, out of Chicago. You're watching TV on Soul Train, and you happen to see Walter Payton dancing, preparing to go another 5 yards. And it's been, you know, as our good buddy DK would say, Bert, only in America.
Well, you try to put these things together, mm-hmm. and it's always fun to find somebody like that. Like, you were on Soul Train, and I just happened to remember it. And at that point, I just asked him. And he was very open about it, and he said, you know, he always danced on his hands as a gymnastic act. And you get these little funny things that happen, and you save them for the right moment. And here was Walter Payton, though I will add Barry Sanders and Jim Brown. Anybody ever saw Jim Brown in number 32 out of Syracuse and the Cleveland Browns? In fact, talking about hands, having nothing to do with boxing, and remember I wrote a book with Angelo Dundee 2 years ago. But and loved every moment of it. But I wrote a book with Jimmy Brown, not with Jimmy Brown. It was called The 100 Greatest Athletes of All Time, and he was number one in my estimation.
Let's back up. Jim Brown, number one. Why, Bert?
Well, it was not just football, where 8 out of 9 years he led the NFL in rushing. Mm-hmm. He might have been the greatest lacrosse player in the history of the sport. He played basketball, averaged 12 points a game for Syracuse, broke track and field records for Syracuse in their intercollegiate meets, and boxed. Other than that, he didn't have much of a career.
He wasn't that good of an athlete.
And he graduated Syracuse with a B-plus average. I mean, I don't even know where in the hell he got the time. But anyway, Jim Brown was, you know, you can't leave he or Barry Sanders out of a discussion of the greatest runners or players in the NFL.
Well, in that book, bro, give us your top 10 greatest athletes of all time.
Well, number one, Jim Brown. Number two, Jim Thorpe, the football player, the baseball player, Major League, and the Olympian.
Olympian, right.
Number three, Babe Didgerson Zaharias. A woman.
Right.
Who
That's
broke
right.
Every record available in the 30s. And even when she started the LPGA, everything, and won golf championships when she was suffering from cancer. Number four, Jackie Robinson.
Jack Roosevelt Robinson.
Nobody remembers the fact he was probably one of the greatest football players for UCLA with Woody Stroud and others in the backfield, but Jackie Robinson was unbelievable. He was also a swimming champion, don't tell Al Campanis.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. And
he actually had buoyancy?
Yeah, thank you. You remember. And poor Al didn't even know what the hell he was talking about. I mean, he was a shortstop when Jackie was at Montreal in the second baseman. And then number five, I had Babe Ruth, who had more wins as a pitcher than any player in the Hall of Fame at the age of 23. He was that great a player all the way around. But all of that put together, just think of how we have, you know, looked at our athletes. And Ali is in the top 10. I mean, there's so many great athletes. I just delighted in doing that book. And Jim Brown, I knew, you know, very well. And it's just really, to me, sports is a way of staying young forever. And that's what I think I've done through sports. I tell people in many ways it's the most fun I've ever had with my clothes on.
How did it all start from you? Are you from New York? Where were you born?
I'm a Washingtonian. mm-hmm. and Richmond, Virginia. I was raised
really?
There.
But when did you get into boxing? That's my. Cause I go back in the early 60s.
I actually went to a fight as a small kid. My granddad took me in Washington, D.C. between, it's 1943, Joe Louis and Buddy Bear for the heavyweight championship. I'm five or 6 years old, and I fell in love with the sport. But I've always fallen in love with all sports. And, you know, I just think that it's exciting, and I made my vote. My avocation, hobby, into a vocation, which is sports. I've written 80 books. I just have a delight in the people I've met. When Angelo Dundee died, mm-hmm. I got the first call I got this morning was from Las Vegas from somebody named, you might know the name, Michael Gerard Tyson.
Mm-hmm. Did you jump at the guy from Brooklyn?
Yeah, from Brownsville.
Wow.
You know, I've known these people. In fact, I've collected autographs since I was 11 years old and still have them all, of sports figures. Babe Ruth.
Who some of the ones you got, Bert?
Oh, I have Babe Ruth. I have Ty Cobb. I used to write to Cobb.
Really?
And they'd write back. The one thing I want to tell you, and I was going through boxes of crap that I've kept over the years. Mm-hmm. Why don't we throw anything out? I mean, we never throw anything out. We keep it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one of my great questions, along with why does Hawaii have interstate highways? You never know why you do this stuff. And I found letters written to me back in the 40s and 50s when I was a little kid from ex-ball players. And it was just so much fun to come across them. Like one of them, and you won't know the name unless you're really, really hard as and fast as an historian. Francis Ouimet was the first American to win the U.S. Open golf tournament, 1913. He was 20 years old. They ran a story on him in a new magazine called Sport Magazine.
What was
and
the last
I wrote
name
to him. Well, that was 1947. Mm-hmm. So I wrote to him. And asked for his autograph, and he wrote me back a letter, and I still have it. I came across it the other day, and it said, at the end, I hope one day to read your name and your accomplishments in the sports pages. And I thought, that was so, if you will, prescient or predictable, and here I am, and I've still got the letter. And I kept all my letters, and... these people were writing back to me, ex-Yankees, ex-Cleveland Browns. Excuse me. This is what you get from talking about Angelo Dundee all day.
Wow.
I wrote a book with Angelo called My View from the Corner.
My View from the Corner, 50 years of boxing, it seems through the eyes of the trainer of champions.
Yes.
I had a question for Bert, actually.
Hold on a second, Bert. Now, in my view, from the corner, legendary boxing trainer Angelo Dundee delivers an enthralling, streetwise account of a life spent sculpturing men into world champions and vividly depicts his involvement in some of the sport's most thrilling and controversial moments. Inside out the ropes, Dundee has crossed paths with an unforgettable parade of personalities. He spins at least one great yarn for every champion, contender, promoter, mobster, and manager he encountered, and many of them never before published, even revealed. Always entertaining, sometimes pungent, and occasionally hilarious, My View from the Corner packs a wallop you would expect from a heavyweight like Dundee. Lady A.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to ask Bert a question. In his book, Boxing's Greatest Fighters, he listed in the top 10, Bert, you had Sugar Ray Robinson, Henry Armstrong, Willie Pep, Joe Louis, Henry Greb, Benny Leonard, Muhammad Ali, Roberto Duran, Doc Stanley's boy, I got to reiterate, Jack Dempsey, and Jack Johnson. Why Henry Armstrong is number two?
In 1937 and 8, there were only 8 divisions then, none of this junior crap and super crap.
Right.
He was champion at the same time of 3 of the 8 divisions and fought
That's true.
Fought for a fourth championship against Seferino Garcia.
Seferino, Yeah.
Right.
And he, and it was a draw, and the agreement was if Armstrong didn't knock out Garcia, it would be a draw. He didn't, it was. But he would have owned four of the eight championships at the same time. In fact, in 38, he fought 21 times, won 21 times, 20 knockouts.
Yeah. Well, you could have ended with Lady A very quickly. You could have said this. He was the best fighter in the world, and on top of that, there was only one champion, and he won. He had like three divisions that they did not even give him, that it was, you know, he was one of the guys that was uncalled for. Lady A, you know, Lady A Armstrong, if you really want to put him, you can almost put him in number two or number three spot.
Right.
I did. I did.
Fighters in the world.
Right, yeah, he had Armstrong and he had Willie Pepper as number three. That's why I was wondering why.
Oh,
you know,
Willie Pepper. The only time people could touch Willie Pepper's when they touched their gloves before the fight.
Now, who was number one? Hey, Barry, I got an argument with you on that. Sandy Salas touched him quite a few times in the two fights or three fights they had.
Well, Sandy, yes. But by that time, remember, Willie had been in an airplane crash, and they told him not only would he not ever fight again, he wouldn't walk again. And he came back before even 6 months to defend the featherweight title. And you know that that airplane crash took something out of him.
Doc, I have a question for
Bert.
Bert.
Hold on, gang. Doc Stanley, Sports Network on the Blake Network, Rainbow Soul, the channel, Sports Network for the show. Bert Sugar, Harold Weston, leading us in reflections and a tribute to Angelo Dundee, the trainer, the mentor, the ambassador of boxing. At the same time, too, we, as moving to Black History Month, we remember Soul Train, Love, Peace, and Soul, and the passion of Don Cornelius, who brought the number one and the biggest dance and music show in African-American history. Right now, we are picking the brains and minds of Bert Sugar and Harold Weston, guys who knew Angelo a lot closer than I did, and
I wrote a book with him. I got the book in my hand.
Bert,
you
gave it
to me, Bert. It's not one of the two sales. Yeah, I want to ask you a question. DeCino Lloyd's here. With your love for boxing and the Hurt Business and all that, did you ever... I don't know. I haven't read it. Did you ever try boxing yourself or being in the ring?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah?
I fought the amateur. I was on my college boxing team. But just to tell you how great I was, my nickname was the Great White Hopeless. But I used to go up and spar with Muhammad Ali up in Deer Lake.
Okay.
In fact, right, if you look on SI.com, Ali's 70th birthday, you'll see pictures of me fighting Ali. Well,
70th birthday.
not exactly fighting. It was not exactly white man's revenge.
Let's go back to you now. Bert, you were a guy who actually met and kind of worked with Angelo, didn't you?
Yeah, I wrote a book with him 2 years ago, My View from the Corner, but he had been a friend of mine for 50 years, 50 years.
I was a kid in Stillman's when I turned pro, and along the lines, there was Ray Arcel, Charlie Goldman, Whitey Bimstein, Chicky Ferrara, and along comes this guy, I think, and he walked in with his brother and said, well, the guy looked like twins. In fact, they looked like twins, and they were trainers, you know, and... he used to work a lot with some of Bert, you remember Carmine Fiore?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, Carmine Fiore.
Carmine Fiore is on the big on the resume of Rocky Marciano.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to train with those guys. I used to watch him. He never trained me, but I met him, you know, shook hands, and that was about it. But I used to see him come in with all those guys, after years, you know, the prominence was when he took over Muhammad Ali and Luis Rodriguez with
Well, they also had Ray Leonard. He also had George Foreman. And
Foreman,
he goes back to his first champion of 15 or 25, and who in the hell's counting, especially with these alphabet soups. His first champion was Carmen Basilio.
Carmen Basilio.
That's
yeah.
it.
Yeah. He was in the corner when he beat Ray Roberts in the Yankee Stadium.
Yes.
That's basically my history.
Now was that the first fight that they had? The first fight.
That was the first fight.
He won in the eighth round.
It was a decision, and that was
the thing about that fight, Ray Robinson. In fact, our good friend Bert Dave Anderson, who wrote the autobiography of Ray, you know, the underworld came to Ray, and they told Ray, look, you know, champ, we got a man here. Why don't you let Carmen, you know, have this one, and, you know, and Ray
Make
said, no, nah, you know, I don't go that way, and they said, well, you know, no hard feelings, you know, it was the money's there, and we're just gonna. And ironically, he lost anyway. But
yeah.
Ray
but
was
the first fight. He won the second. If you remember the picture of Basilio with that eye that looked
the
like
eye
a
eye was a bubble. It was an onion.
It was an onion.
But Bert mentioned in his show, he had a show that he did, and he mentioned that the fact that Carmen actually beat him just because he was upset with it, that he had insulted his wife.
Well, yeah, Carmen held a grudge.
Still does.
And that was Angie's first champion.
Right.
And Angelo Dundee was such a treat. And even after all his fighters had retired, and he'd taken them through their careers, he did with Ali and Ray Leonard and George Foreman in the return of George.
Willie Pastrana.
Carmen was his first champion. Willie Pastrana, Aegis Sugar Ramos. He had so many fighters. He took them all out of Cuba. But to know him, and even after his fighters had gone out of the ring, he became an ambassador for the sport. There is nobody who ever met Angelo Dundee who wasn't a fan of his, who didn't speak well of. In fact, there was nothing to say that wasn't
gentleman.
Well of.
Total gentleman.
What was it about his personality? Dr. Kelly Sports and Depth on the Blake Bitter Network, Rainbow Souls, the channel Sports and Depth of the show. It is our opening of the Black History Month, and in it we make a tribute to both Don Kinnear and Angelo Dundee. What was it about Angelo that you know, unlike Arcel, unlike Fudge, unlike Durham, that in his personality, was a lot of it Bert and Harold, because of being around Ali, that he maybe picked up some of the personality or you know, this ambassadorship that he has unquestionably that he had?
No, he was his own self. In fact, that's what Ali most, if you will, not enjoyed about him, but respected him for.
Right.
He came to him as pure and simply Angelo Dundee. And in fact, Ali more respected him twice, three times, whatever the multiple is, when he didn't get involved in Ali's life. He let Ali go be his own when he didn't step forward for the draft, when he changed his name and religion. Angelo was there in support by not bothering his personal life.
You say you only sold two books. I'm glad, but it's in your book. Angelo said, he said they were after my guy. He said they were after my guy. He said first of all they wanted to make him look stupid by making him 1F, and then they make him 1A, and then he said, what's this big thing about changing your name? He said, you know, Hollywood stars do it all the time.
His answer was, Dundee's not my real name either.
Everybody look in that situation, but still there's only three names out there as the greatest trainers at that time. We're talking about from the maybe 40s, 50s, 60s.
Yeah.
Was Angelo Dundee, Customato, and Gil Clancy.
Yeah.
Well, you had a couple
there
others.
No other names that was brought out of the world of boxing.
What about Ray Arcel?
Arcel was at the end
of
his career.
Yeah, he was there.
Really?
Freddie Brown, Brown, Chickie Ferrara.
Freddie was more of a cut man. He wasn't more of a trainer.
Eddie Fudge.
Well, you know, you got to mention also Sid Martin, man. Sid Martin was
no,
there.
It,
I mean,
no.
Yep, that's the man that grew me.
No, but he grew
how
me.
About
but he was
How about Chickie Ferrara?
Yeah, Chickie Ferrara was there for decades.
They wasn't on that pedestal of trainers.
Well,
there's a big difference.
You've got to look at them each in their own era.
Right, exactly.
But they were trainers.
But you brought up an interesting point. What the hell is a trainer? Give me a definition. There are more sides of the Rubik's Cube.
I'm going to tell you right now, Bert, with a trainer, I can tell you this, okay? A trainer is a guy that brings a kid and he taught him how to throw the jab, the right hand, and brought him through life to know how to be a world champion from age 15 to being a world champion.
Yeah,
there
are more sides to being a trainer than a Rubik's Cube.
Yeah,
you're a dietitian,
you're
a father.
You can put the words around you want to, but my point is being in the middle of all that and understanding the structure of it, what it is, the point is that a trainer is your father, and your mentor that's going to bring you to what you want to be in life.
Bingo.
That's what a trainer is.
And he's also a dietitian. He's also
and
a father.
And that's the problem we have in the United States is that we don't have no dietitian because everybody's fat because they don't have a dietitian no more.
I don't know where to take that.
Don't deal with that one. Leave that one alone.
You know what we're going to do?
We're
going to take
about
a break.
Dundee, I remember Dundee to be very quiet. I never heard the man scream in all the days that I was in Stillman. He always talked to the guy low-key, teaching him, telling him, do this, do that. Maybe that's what a trainer's all about too, a psychologist, because he would talk to him. I mean, one of the worst students that he was partially involved with Joe Mancelli, and you know Joe Mancelli.
Oh, yeah.
Crazy freaking dude from Bessonaries.
Yeah,
and
Joe Mancelli.
He had Mancelli eating out of his hand when he was training him.
Joe Mancelli Joe Mancelli would pay people to hit him.
Yeah.
<He's crazy. laughs> Gang, we're going to take a break. Hold on. We're going to take a commercial.
Gang, I'm going to excuse myself because.
Are you leaving, Bert?
I've got to. I've got pills to take and all this crap to my health.
Well, Bert, before you go, can you give us surmise, one or two words that explains and kind of categorize your great friend, Angelo Dundee?
The nicest person you ever met, period, end of paragraph. Nobody ever had a bad word to say about him.
Right.
And everybody stood by him, no matter how different they were, i.e. Muhammad Ali or... George Foreman, I got to tell you how revered Angelo Dundee was. One of the first calls I got this morning came from a man named Michael Gerard Tyson, who never had anything to do with Dundee, but wanted to talk about him because his legacy was such that Mike was a massive fan of his. And you know Mike is an historian.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So this man stands very tall, and in any discussion of great trainers, Angelo Dundee will be in that picture of great trainers, middle of the first row, front and center.
Last thing before you cut out, you know, you're the guy that cleaned up Yankee Stadium. Give me your top three baseball players there, Bert, before you leave us.
Babe Ruth, number one. Because I know he didn't play against the Satchel Pages of his time or others, but at the age of 23, he had more wins as a pitcher than any pitcher in the Baseball Hall of Fame at that age.
Wow.
And then he goes on to have this great career hitting .342 with home runs, etc. Number two, Christy Mathewson. A pitcher way back at the first at the turn of the last century.
Yeah, I think he had 331 seasons in a row, didn't he?
Yeah. Now he won 30 games three times, and then I'm going to surprise you, Roberto Clemente.
Wow.
and then Joe DiMaggio, and then Mays, Willie Mays. I once asked DiMaggio, you'd like this, and we would be good friends. Could you have made that catch Willie Mays made? Could you have made that catch I asked Mays made off Vic Wertz in the 54 series?
Right.
DiMaggio thought a second, and he said, I wouldn't have lost my cap.
Hey, Doc, can I ask Bert a quick question before you leave?
Hurry up. He's got to take his medicine. Hurry up.
All right, Bert, in your opinion, what do you think is the single greatest boxing match ever that trumps every other boxing match in your opinion?
Of all time.
Jack Dempsey versus Louis Firpo,
1923. Oh,
why, Bert?
The first punch each landed knocked the other man down.
Yeah.
And then there were seven knockdowns in the first round, two in the second. And that's the fight, if you remember the picture, that George Bellows painted of Dempsey going through the ropes.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Right.
And the newspaper guy's pushing him back.
Yeah. Jack Jack Lawrence of the New York Times was typing away, and he just felt somebody falling on his typewriter. He just pushed him. Get the hell out of here.
I know, but he has to leave, Doc. Just one quick question. I wanted to ask Bert, does he still use that typewriter?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, I use an electric typewriter. How's that? I use an electric.
Wow, you really advanced.
I don't even know what the words email mean. I don't know what the hell that is. I asked my grandmother.
For a while, Bert. Go easy on those stokes.
Yeah, well, I have a new brand that's named after me now. I asked my granddaughter, what the hell am I doing here with this internet? And she just punches some button. I have no idea.
But nothing like good raw news, I tell you.
Well,
good
I'm of the old school. And the guys who, when I came aboard the sports scene, they were writing with typewriters and long yellow paper, and they still did it
50
years later, because that's how you were learned, or learned, as they say in the South.
Yeah, Bert, you know, hold on a second. I'm going to go back to an interview I did with Angelo after the Ali Frazier fight. Just listen, maybe we'll listen a minute. Bert and everybody, Angelo Dundee, after Ali Frazier 2, Madison Square Garden. The voice of the ambassador of boxing, Bert Sugar's friend, Harold Fresson's friend, my friend, and our guy who always loved. Bert, you got to come back. We love you. Thanks for being with us, Bert.
All right. Anytime you need me, you know where I am if I can find myself.
Thank you, Bert.
Everybody say get well, because Bert, you know, was in the hospital for 15 days, a little pneumonia and stuff. So that's everybody says some good well wishes to Bert Sugar here, gang.
Get better.
Love you, brother. Take care.
God bless.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Hello, Bert. Yeah.
This was
get
fun.
Well,
let's
get
do it
well.
Again.
And we will. Gang, we're going to take a break, come back, listen to Howard Cosell. We'll talk some more about our thoughts of Angelo Dundee. I've got the book here with me. And now we will just...
We're going to talk about Don Cornelius.
Yeah, we're getting to him. I said, hold on, Howard. Hold on, Howard. Right. Howard said, there's more to be than left foot.
I know
right
Don
hand.
Cornelius. I know him, too.
Hey, Harold.
Calm down.
Hey, we'll get back to the gangster in a minute. Hold on. Doc Shelley, Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Souls, the Channel Sports Deputy Show. It is our opening Black History Month tribute to Don Cornelius and also Angelo Dundee. Great to have Bert Sugar, Hall of Famer and historian. We're going to do a little break right now, and then we'll be back and talk some more boxing and some more Don Kniez. And we actually do this. Listen to the first part of this now. This is for you, baby.
The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. BlakeRadio.com.
Doc Stanley, Sports and Death on the Blake with an Urban Rainbow Soul, the channel. Sports and Death is the show.
Hey. Can I ask Harold my question now? Sir, is that okay?
No, you can't.
Check out Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, where you'll hear talk radio at its best, featuring entertainment, sports, nutrition, Africana studies, holistic healing, and celebrities. Listen to Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, where you'll hear talk radio at its best. Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com. Talk radio for your mind, body, and soul.
The gang is all here. T-Wings, Lady A, Harold Weston. I thought the Hoopsa was going to join us, too. Harold was with us. Now we've got Harold. Now, who else is with us that hasn't reported in? We got Dusty. We got Lady A, C-Wings. Hoops is not here. Who is here that has not? Okay, Rooney. Anybody here that hasn't reported in? Well, I'm looking for Mike Bellamy to join us. And also, I wanted Ted Smith. Tim Smith is going to try to call. He's at the Knick game tonight.
Not like to stay off the right movie and cast a thousand?
Well, hey, you know, we're talking about two guys, if you look back, had a profound effect upon not only African-American history, but American history. I mean, you know, Cornelius in the sense of entertainment. And it's amazing how sports and entertainment so intertwined. I remember at a boxing press conference some years ago, Samir Adin, my photographer at the legendary Big Red newspaper, and he was sitting next to a guy, and he asked the guy, he said, "Where you from?" The guy said, "Well, I'm from, you know, Detroit or something." He said, "Oh," he said, "so you're into boxing?" He said, "No, I'm not into boxing." He said, "I'm into entertainment and music." He said, "You know, I need to open an act for the Whistlers." He said, "Well, you know what? My sports head is a stand-up comic. You talk to him." And that's how I wound up getting the job. We've talked the first part so much about and Angelo Dundee. I think not enough cannot be said. And you know, Harold had said something that was really profound. He was a guy that everybody respected and liked. And the thing about Angelo is I remember, too, his position with Ali. I remember there was a scene where Ali was in the dressing room, and Angelo came in. He said, "Oh, there's too many guys in here." He said, "You know, I don't like it. The dressing room's too crowded." And Ali said, "Well, I said they could come in, and I'm the boss." Angelo said, "You're right. You're the boss." Their relationship was just so unique. Angelo's ability, quick thinking, they talked about the Cooper fight when Cooper dropped Ali and Ali came back to the corner kind of dazed. And before the fight, Angelo had noticed that there was a blemish on the glove. And so Angelo told the people, "Hey, look, there's something wrong with this glove. No, we need another glove." They were looking
lie.
For a glove.
Stop, Harold, I want you to figure it out. Stop lying to the people. Harold,
you go tell the other side. Calm down, you know, if I have to give you... Did you hear that
first part? Can I ask my question to Harold now?
No, everybody right now is listening or you're calling out, okay? But now supposedly, that's the story. So now, Harold, what happened?
Dundee knew Ali was hurt, okay? Mm-hmm. He knew that he would not be able to get himself together in that last 45 seconds. He cut the glove.
If you look at the situation, he cut the glove.
He admitted later, years later, he cut the glove. And that was the thing that saved Ali, to give him that next minute so they can change the glove
around.
So he can do what he was going to do. That was the whole thing, Doc. Everybody had this whole thing in life.
Very different. Mm-hmm.
Differently, okay? Let me explain Ali's life.
I was reading from the excerpt. I had heard the story that you heard that you said that he had cut the glove, And what it did, it gave Ali time
and
to
recuperate. And that was smart on Dundee's part because he knew that him being the head trainer, he had to protect an Olympic fighter that he was beating the dog out of a guy, but now he got hit with one shot, and now he's hurt, but he had to bring back to life. And Dundee did what, from the old school, we have to think of the cut the glove. Now we have to take a couple of minutes to revive him. And that's what Dundee did. He's from the old school.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, yeah, the young group, that's the old school situation.
Dusty, hold on. I got you.
Yeah, go ahead.
I got C-Wings, Lady A, Harrell, and Rooney. 1, 2, 3. I got an extra person. Who's joining us?
Nobody.
Okay.
Nobody.
I got Harrell, Lady A, Dusty, C-Wings, Rooney. 347-7339-343. Who's that?
Okay. Doc, my point is, who's gonna question what I just said?
Question about what?
I got a question.
Well, that's the question. I mean, there's a million stories. I mean, you told the one. I mean, that's the one that, and this is the thing that I always talked about. And you talked about, you know, because anytime you talk about trainers, you were talking about your relationship with Gil. And this is inadvertently the same type of relationship that Ali had with Angelo. And I think Harold, that was a big void in Tyson's life when Cus was gone, and then it even was even hyphened even more when Jacobs passed away. Am I correct?
No, it was more delivered. It was Cus and it was Kevin Rooney. When Rooney left,
Rooney,
he was finished.
The trainer.
Tyson was finished. You see, when you're not an athlete and don't understand the structure of that trainer or that mentor that's with you and they're gone, that takes a big burden out of you performing as what you're going to do in any competition.
Mm-hmm.
Any competition. And that's what people, that the millions, hundreds of millions that never went in the competition, and those few millions that did do the competition, and the few thousands who was great at what they did, y'all do not know what that those few thousand understood when that person left their lives, that they were not there no more, and that they could achieve, keep going on if that person lived forever. Because you know what? You've never been there before. And you
yeah,
get the greatest
vacuum
feeling
that will never
in the
be
world
filled.
When that person's there and it keeps you going. And that's what you will never, ever feel and never, ever see in life. And you will
exactly.
never
that's,
know.
The person was not you. There anymore physically or spiritually. You may have a thought process working overtime of that person, but the person physically is not there anymore, and there's a void. And whoever comes in is an imposter, and that's what
right.
you got to understand.
Right.
It's a total imposter.
Right.
The Dundees of this world who took Leonard was a slapper with his freaking jab. If you remember the story, he was a slapper.
Right.
And Dundee took that jab of his and made it a reasonable jab where you say, man, this guy's a great jabber. But that was Dundee. That was a Dundee creation.
Right.
And
he made him beat Tommy Hearns. He said, boy, you're blowing it. You're blowing it.
Yeah.
Angelo Dundee, he was a man that represented class. He was a gentleman. I don't consider him a trainer. He was a developer. He could make a mediocre fighter.
How old are you?
Me, I'm 38.
All right, you don't know. You don't have an idea what Angelo Dundee was.
Yeah.
You really don't. Don't even make that comment, what you just said. And I'm going to say that to you. He was a great trainer. He trained Rodriguez. He trained Con Basilio. Don't ever say that out your mouth no more. You do not know. Back up.
He may have used the wrong terminology, but he was paying homage to him. We got another call coming. Hold on. I mean, I think he was trying to say Angelo was beyond a trainer. Angelo was something unique, something special.
Man, he was. Sometimes he had to make some athletes.
Who just joined
up the fighter? I mean, come on. It was an engineer. He does everything.
Well, I mean, but that's the thing we're trying to say. I mean, he may not have used the right term, but he wasn't being detrimental. He wasn't taken away. He was trying to say that in a lot of ways that Angelo was not a graffiti artist. He was a Picasso. And he may have said the terms in the wrong way, but everything he has said, you know, Angie is just, I mean, every time I saw Angie, man, it was like he knew you for years. I remember we were at an affair, and I went over to ask him, so I said, well, for you, sure. So, I mean,
what he said to me when I said, can I take a picture with you? He said, it was like two steps shy. I said, you could come sit on my lap, too. Like that kind of thing.
Well, yeah. Hey, listen, you can always come sit on my lap, okay? You know what I mean? My goodness. Gang, let's take a little break here. We've been saluting Angelo Dundee, and you see the profound effect he's had with Ali and Ray Robinson, Ray Leonard. And, you know, the thing about Ray Leonard, it's funny, you know, Ray Leonard asked Ray Robinson, could he use the Sugar Ray moniker, and actually Ray Leonard is named after Ray Charles, whose name is
Ray Charles Robinson.
And it was really funny that Ray Leonard, who was named after the real Ray Robinson, went to Ray Robinson to ask to basically use the prefix to his own name. That's it, the Duncan. I remember Soul Train. It would come on Saturday. And you know, Dunk, you can bet your last monies. And he would always close the show, you know, with that classic line of his.
Peace.
You know what I mean?
So,
you know, he would always come, you know, love, peace, and soul. And you know, some of you, Soul Train started in 1971. Cornelius hosted the first nationally syndicated episode of Soul Train in 71. The Jackson 5 in 72 debuted on Soul Train, performing I Want You Back, Ooh, Ooh Baby. 73, the legendary Stevie Wonder makes his first appearance on the show. 75, Rock and Roll, Soul, I mean, they were still together, at Harold Ike and Tina Turner finally hit Soul Train stage. Kenneth Gamble, Lee and Huff wrote the show's theme song, the Soul Train. Hip-hop legend Curtis Blow in 1980 became the first rapper on Soul Train. In 87, Dionne Warwick and Luther Vandross hosted the first Soul Train Awards. 1999, popular soap opera star Selma Moore became the host of Soul Train. And in 2008, Don Thomas sold Soul Train Entertainment Prizes to Intermedia Partners. 2010, the Best of Soul Train DVD, which features classic performers, was released. 2011, a documentary last year about Soul Train, the hippest trip in America, which is also the 40th anniversary. The Chicago Street, where the pilot was taped, is named after Don Cornelius. For Sands and Soul Train, I'll never forget to send you to sign off. As always, in parting, we wish you love, peace, and soul. It was created and produced by Cornelius in 1971. It became an integral part of African American history and tradition. Families, you know, sat around. We tried to make every show a new event, he once said. We didn't want to get to the point where one show was clearly greater or more interesting than the other. He succeeded. Soul Train remains the longest running nationally syndicated series in history, 1971 to 2006. And he kind of admitted that he was surprised. And I think that's the word, Harold, for a guy that you knew. And we're going to start with you, that everybody's surprised that it's a suicide, Harold, according to what has been reported.
Well, you know, I got to say that, I mean, a lot of men in life, okay, I know I can understand what Don has went through. Anything that you go through, pain, and it's aggravating pain constantly, having a stroke and having sort of a burn, you know, brain tumor, that is very strong for any man to go through. And I'm going to say this, is that you looking through life, and all you're doing is sitting there taking pills, going through a whole transition of pain at the same time. But life is keep going by, but you have no friends. You can't go out, and you're sitting in your house going through this process. It comes to a point that you have accomplished everything that you wanted to in this world, and you just say to yourself, fuck it. I hate to use that word, Doc, but you do say that. And it doesn't mean anything no more. And so I think Don said, he called his son. I heard in the paper, he called his son. He talked to him. And his son called the police and had him go over there. And his father was dead. And they tried to survive him, but it didn't work. But my point is that pain, I've been through pain. Believe me, I've been through pain. And pain 24/7, a lot of men cannot go through that, okay? And
Doc,
that's what Don Cornelius was going through.
Doc,
so
if I could just piggyback on that.
I created him because I met him several times. We talked. We had a good conversation. When you got to understand, in our era, because a lot of y'all don't know, in our era, when a black person did anything through that little small window that we had to go through, that was respected. We all knew each other. That little small window from the 50s, 60s, and 70s, that little small little window.
Good point, Al.
That little, I mean, y'all don't even understand the window I'm talking about. I mean, my man, though, I mean, that little small window.
Exactly.
You missed it.
Twice as good
to
get half a chance.
You was black. Everybody was black knew who you were.
Uh-huh. Al,
exactly.
And you know what, Al? You bring a point up. Arthur Ashe, twice as good to get half a chance. And there was... And this is what's been lost, the pride that you had in the black garbage man, the pride that you had
right.
in the black cop
right.
and the black fireman, the pride that you had for Nat King Cole, even though his show was only 15 minutes because white people wouldn't sponsor him.
15
okay?
minutes
right.
show.
You know, the pride. Right. And that's what Ali and you talked about, Doc Stanley Sports Network on the Blake Ritter Network, Rainbow Soul, the channel, Sports Network show. I mean, you had the pride for Don Cornelius because you know what? He had succeeded and superseded Dick Clark, who you had to watch, because there was
Doc,
nothing. There was so much that you had to watch. I mean, there was so much pride in Bill Cosby and I Spy, who wasn't a maid, who wasn't a cook, but he was, you know, he was a spy. You know,
right.
he was the star. He was, and I look at the hypocrisy and the fallacy and the lie that's perpetrated when the black so-called exploitation movies came. I had no problem with black heroes. Are you kidding me? I had no problem with the black
there
guys.
There were the people that you looked up to, Doc, because
Cornelius
was a hero because he wanted...
Great Digger Jones and Coffin Ed.
He wanted... Cornelius wanted something equal to American Bandstand because we had none of all those dudes, American Bandstand and all that,
Bobby Benton,
Kitch Henderson,
you know
and
mean,
all that
Elvis
crap.
Presley.
We wanted something on major TV for the people. And that's exactly what he struggled for. And there was a lot of opposition to that. It also took a station that wanted to take a chance on giving him that opportunity. They didn't realize the monster that they created. And it created a following because after a while you saw a lot of pale faces in that freaking dance line and coming in there and getting on the show. And
you know what? That's a point that's so valuable because the kids. People don't understand. Doc Stanley Sports Network on the Blake Ritter Network, Rainbow Soda Channel, Sports Network, the show. We are paying homage and tribute to Don Cornelius and Angelo Dundee. And I mean, Willie Mays, kids ain't, they're not, hey, Smokey Robinson talked about, and people, if you ever noticed, the Isley Brothers' first big hit, This Old Heart of Mine, the 45 cover, is not a picture of the Isley Brothers. it's a picture of some sort of drawing, because Berry Gordy knew that he couldn't put a black face down in the South because there would be problems, not from the kids, but from the parents of the kids. And they were tired of going to places where, you know, the black kids were in the back. And Cornelius came on, and you're right, you know, because you saw the influx now of white people saying, hey, man, which I'm about to mute. Willie Mays talked about as a kid that, you know, Dusty would play shortstop, and, you know, your white friend would play second base, and the police would come and make the kids segregate. No. You black kids play here. And so when they left, you had an all-black team playing an all-white team. So the kids, when the cops left, they said, okay, Dusty, let's go switch. They went back to an integrated team. So, you know, it's so much of Willie Mays' mindset of, you know, if the kids ran the world. And but Harold's point is that, and it's not there today. I mean, black people don't even talk to each other on the street anymore. But the 60s, that black power movement, the blowout Afro, the dashikis, the recognition of Africa, African beads, and realizing that, I mean, you know, the government went after James Brown. James Brown, there was so much pride in. James Brown made all his money off 98% of shit. Well, high popular African people. But you were proud of James Brown. You were proud of Willie Mays. And Ali came along and said, hey, man, hey, it's beautiful to be black, proud to be black, keep on keeping on. And he thought, Joe Louis, if you don't understand what Joe Louis had to go through. I mean, you know, Joe Louis had to give up 10%. Of his purse for 10 years to get the shot at Braddock, and Joe Louis had to understand. You know, he always said, you know, he couldn't be like Ali. He couldn't say, hey man, he's a bum. No, Joe, he's a good fighter, and you know.
But Doc, this young generation, this young generation does not understand.
They don't know, and they don't relate.
With the fact that we understood that we had to die, we understood.
Yeah.
It was no if, and, buts about it. We came through the 60s. We said, since we know where the situation is, we willing to die. So we're going to riot until we get what we want.
If
we
a
don't,
man
we all
hasn't
gonna
found
die.
Something to die for, then
right.
life isn't
and,
worth
and my,
living.
And my
Dr.
Point
Martin
is,
Luther King Jr.
My point is this, Doc. And my point is, we have did things that has made this country where they are today. They understood that. There's no question about that. My point is that I'm saying that what we have to do now is that the young generation of this era has got to understand. This has not been a rose garden that we're going through. And that everything has not been unique. We have to now lay out the groundwork. And now we have went through the struggle, because we had the struggle, it should be over. Now we have to say, here's the blueprint that we want to be respected, and that the people that did the right thing, like the Angela Dundee, the Gil Clancy, Customer, they all in that you know, Hall of Fame. But there is other people that accomplished things that people have overlooked. And now we have to bring them to the surface. That's all I'm saying to him.
Hey, Doc, is there where I can get partially equal time? But I just want to make a quick point, if I may. I think the part of the problem now is, and I'll try to be brief, is that a lot of the young people just simply fail to remember that there are folks that paved the way, okay? Folks tend to think that they got where they are now or any modicum of success on their ability and their ability only, which, as we all know, is not the case. I think the simple problem is, well, maybe not so simple, is that young folks of these days tend not to think of, like you said, Howard saying earlier, and Dusty, about the folks who paved the way before them, without which they wouldn't have made the strides that we now have.
Well, you know, it's true. It's you talk about the 60s, I go back to the 40s, man. You know, and let me tell you, man, It was a war, and it's still a war today. Not only is it a war today, is it a war?
Please,
it's a war today, and you know it's a worse war today because you're dealing with your own generation who cannot relate to what you've gone through. I was just remembering a story I read in Ebony Magazine how they didn't want to give Cornelius the shot at, what was it, Channel 11, I think it was, or 13. They didn't want to give him, why? Because a man had an afro. They wanted him to Americanize it, to cut it down. And he refused. He refused. I mean, those are the little tidbits I think people don't know. And they have the other flourishing things, like I said, American Bandstand and whatever that crap. And this was the only show, but then they wanted to Americanize them as what they wanted to see. They didn't want to see all this rebellion, Afro stuff, and all that garbage. People, you know, they give you a hard time. But the fact is that this is a struggle, and the struggle is still today, but it's a twofold struggle, man. The kids don't relate to what the hell we had to go through, man. And that's sad. That's very sad.
Let me say, Dusty, just quickly, I'll give you a perfect example. The more things change, the more they stay the same. I remember being on the set of a TV show, network show called New York Undercover, which features two cops, young cops, one Latino, one African-American.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, during the course between takes, we got into a discussion with, you know, some of the officials of the show, you know, just yapping between takes. And it was made known to us that originally they didn't want the black cops and
Malik Yoba.
Malik Yoba. And Michael DiLorenzo.
Yeah.
Appears a lot, light-skinned Latino brother with a Don Johnson title. And they gave the brother title, put that on the air, holding it up, because they wanted a light Latino dude, a.k.a. Michael DiLorenzo, and a Don Johnson, a.k.a. New York Undercover, the blonde, blue-haired type. They didn't want to give the brother the role. But what happened is they held out, and said, hey, this is how we see it. This is what we want. And so they finally gave them, you know, what they wanted. But they said they made our budget so tight because they didn't want to, that they wouldn't even validate our guest star's park, okay? Only after a few months when they were number one on the network, you know, did they get number one treatment. So the more things change, the more they stay the same.
As often things change, they remain the same. You know what I mean? Gentlemen, ladies, we're going to move into Sports to Death with the lights off, mic on. So we'll let Larry close. We'll come back and chat. Tribute! Memories and reflections of Don Cadiz.
Hey, Doc.
Yeah.
Can I ask Harold a question when we get back?
I don't know if Harold's taking any more questions tonight.
Holy God for the question.
Doc said he's supposed to put the place in the network. Thank you for the channel. Sports Death for the show. A tribute. Angelo Dundee, who passed away yesterday, along with Don Cornelius. And we are reminiscing about both men, talking about both men, and realizing that classic line that Don Cornelius always had, and we just, as Howard's kind of reflecting on maybe a lot of reasons why things did happen the way they did. Angelo Dundee seen as an ambassador to the sweet science and an integral part of the life and times of none other than the great Muhammad Ali. Don Cornelius, that great line, as always, in parting, we wish you love, peace, and soul. I simply say from the bottom of my heart, God bless you all and trust in God. Live your life today as you have to stand before God tomorrow. Life's most persistent and most urgent question is, what are you doing for others? Hey, the Son of Man came to serve and not be served. Don't move. Larry's going to close us off. Then we're going to cut the lights off and sneak right back in here. And guess what? Lady A is going to ask a question for the 217th time on the Doc Stanley Sports and Death Show.
Oh, that is funny.
She better have a glow
dress. This concludes another edition of Sports and Death with Doc Stanley. We thank you for listening and encouraging you to tell a friend about Sports and Death with Doc Stanley. You can hear that and many other great programs on the Blake Radio Network. Have a great day. Welcome to Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley on the Blake Radio Network. On each and every show, Doc takes you inside the world of sports to hear from the movers, shakers, and decision makers. I know you thought there were seven wonders of the universe, where here's the eighth, Doc Stanley.
Dear Lord, thank you for another day. Thank you that we are here on this side of the dirt. Thank you for the little things we so largely take for granted. Thank you for being our God and being our Savior. Thank you that in our lifetime there live D'Angelo Dundee and Don Canese. And more importantly, that your way be ours. Your God, all bodies. Thank you. We praise your holy name, and we ask these blessings in the name that are coming unmerited, unforeseen, and unheard. Amen. In God's name, Jesus. Amen. Amen. And with that, we are in our segment of Sports and Death. Mic off. Mic on. Lights off. And gang, also, you know, we're going to talk some more about Don and Angelo. And then I want us to move into, with Dusty leading the way, thoughts of this coming Sunday Super Bowl. You know, the Giants in the Super Bowl, there was a time during the course of the season that the Giants would go to the Super Bowl only if they were going to buy tickets. Well, now they are the ticket.
Can I ask Harold a question now?
And listen, no, you know when you hear grown folks talking, you be quiet.
Can I ask Harold a question now?
Remember, you had to go sit on the couch, man. You had to go sit there with those stoop.
God.
Oh, man. Doc Stanley, Sports Devil, the Blake, with the Never Rainbow Soul, the channel, Sports Devil, the show. Ladies and gentlemen, they are the greatest in the world. You get no better crop of people. I want to listen right here, my crew. There, here they come. Hold on, here they come. Lady A leading. No, that's Dusty. Is that Dusty?
Yes. With my new mule.
That's Dusty walking. Okay. Lady A, ask your question. It's mic on, lights off, sports and death. Remembering Angelo Dundee and Don Canese, and now we will continue to talk about them and then move into boxing and talk some Super Bowl. Lady A, kick the way, and gang, take it away.
Okay, I have a twofold question now for Harold.
No.
Hey, Harold, right. Back in the day, who had a nicer afro, you or Doc?
Hey, Harold didn't
none
have
them,
an afro.
None of them
had
the afro.
Harold had a process.
I'm very smooth, babe.
Harold, you know your afro looked better than his. Come on now,
stop. I had a blowout J5 afro.
Hey.
Did you have a fro, or did you have a process?
No, I had no fro. I was just smooth. Harold, my second question.
How much of a grin do you think that Doc had on his face when at the top 10 of the greatest fighters... his boy was number 8, Roberto Duran. Come on, how much of a grin you think?
Who was number 1 on that list anyway?
He had Sugar Ray Robinson number 1.
Sugar Ray was number 1. Okay.
Yeah, she had Sugar Ray Robinson number 1.
Henry Armstrong number 2.
Henry Armstrong
Wait, no,
2.
Yo, Henry Armstrong was Sugar Ray Robinson's idol.
Yes.
Did you know that?
Yes.
Yeah. You knew that?
Yeah.
Lady A, she knows everything.
Dude, come on.
I mean, Rooney, do you have a question for Lady?
Y'all mustn't see Muhammad Ali fight, did y'all?
Go ahead,
it's funny, he had Ali number 7.
Harold, talk to us, Harold.
I mean, how do you make Sugar Ray Robinson? He was good. I mean, he was great. But you didn't see Muhammad Ali fight, did you?
Harold, stop there, Harold. I told somebody the other day, I said, you know what? Ali's my man because Ali fought everybody. He didn't duck nobody. He fought Joe too. I mean, Ali fought. And because how? Because it was you right here
and
on Sports
and
Death.
Ray did
like
not
us.
Fight everybody.
Who?
Ray fought the people he wanted to fight.
Talk to
me,
Hal.
To make money.
Okay. And if you look at
Hey,
Ray's
Dusty, don't
record.
Make no excuses, Dusty. Back off, Dusty.
He wouldn't fight a black guy because there was no money.
Right.
He fought the
right.
white guys because he made money.
Right.
And I have to give him his props for doing that. And
so,
I'm
so in other words, you're saying Ray Robinson was a racist?
You're the baddest man in the world.
Yeah.
You're the baddest.
His color was
in the business of being the baddest man in the world. If you want to conquer this world, you got to be the baddest man of beating everybody in the world.
Talk to me, Harold. Talk
that's
to me,
what
Harold.
It's all about.
They don't hear
no,
you.
No, don't come with all that. You don't.
No, they don't hear you, Harold. Tell them again, Harold.
You.
Tell them again, Harold.
No, don't tell me. Don't tell me. I know what I'm talking about.
Did you say something about his mama? That's the fighting word, baby. That's the fighting word. Hey, hold on, Harold. She said your mama wear combat boots. Come on back on him, baby. Come back on him.
Keep it clean, keep it clean.
I know he never wanted to face Tommy Hearns. I know he never wanted to face Benitez. We ain't going to talk about
you. You're talking about different eras, my friend.
No, we're talking about life.
Dusty, you can't win against the gangster.
They're talking about different eras.
You can't win against the gangster.
No, no. The word is skill. The whole world in life is skill. If you got the skills, you go there.
Oh, no.
He said, you can't win against the gangster. What's wrong with you?
No. The word is money. You don't go in
no,
there.
No, it ain't about money.
Come on, Rudy. Wake up, Rudy. Wake up, baby. Join us now.
No, money don't mean nothing in my life.
No.
Money don't mean nothing. Because if it was about money, you have a whole lot of punk-ass people in here in this life. John F. Kennedy would be a punk. It was about money.
I got a quick question. I keep hearing about this guy, and I need you to pick on how good he really was. But you too, Dusty. I keep hearing that all of the legends and the Ray Robinsons and whatnot wouldn't fight this guy named Charlie Burley. How good was he?
Oh, bad.
Charlie Burley was
very
good. Charlie Burley would have killed Ray Robinson.
Oh, nobody won't fuck with Charlie Burley.
That's right. Charlie Burley would have killed Ray Robinson.
Nobody won't fuck with Charlie. Charlie Burley was a Al Weston. You didn't want to fuck with that Charlie Burley. You didn't want to fuck with Charlie Burley.
Right. Say, there was no money fighting Charlie
Burley.
Yeah,
right. There you go. Right. You
there was
me?
No money
fighting
Charlie Burley.
Wait. Yeah, when Charlie Burley walked down the street, you just spread apart. Don't mess
you
with
you went across the other side.
Yeah. No. Charlie Burley. Ray Robinson would tell you that. Don't mess with Charlie Burley.
Absolutely.
That's what I'm talking about.
Been a champion back then.
I'm like, do I have to say anymore?
The what?
We walked the walk, we talked the talk, and we knew who we were. That's simple as that.
Plain and simple. That's exactly how it was. And I was nothing but a prelim. Harold Wesson was a champion.
That's between.
But
now,
that's
now
exactly
you got
to
look at
did.
This. He between Charlie Burley and Harold Wesson. Now, where did he go from there?
I don't know. Where? I have no idea. But he wasn't going to fight for no money. I'm telling
right.
you guys.
And one thing about real players and real professionals, it ain't about the money. It's about the
Well, I totally disagree because it's about the money. I'm not going in there to get bounced around.
But the bottom
and not
line,
make any money.
I done seen great people fight for no money and still did what they did when they fought and won the title. And you want me to give you an example?
Go ahead.
Do you want me to give you an example?
Yes, I'll give you an example.
Okay. When they did the bidding for, not Holyfield, but Mike Tyson. They did the bidding and they didn't think he was going to take the offer, but he did take the offer and knocked him out. It was a Holyfield fight.
Yeah.
The damn fight was. Damn. And they were shocked that he took the fight and he knocked him out. And he did not. So it was less money. It was really like money he never thought he was going to take.
Are you talking about not Ray Mercer? What you talking about? No.
Riddick Bowe?
No. There was a purse bid and they did a low bid for the fight. Mm. And he took the offer, and they were shocked that he took the offer, and they knew he was gonna win anyway, no matter how, if it was more money or less. But they were surprised that he wasn't gonna take the lesson. Oh man, who the heck was it?
Wow.
They thought they were slick.
Heavyweights, middleweights.
It was heavyweight.
Jesus.
Oh, but you know who I'm talking about. Damn, what's the guy's name?
I hate when that happens.
Yeah, mental a block. It wasn't Tommy Morrison, was it? No, the white guy.
No, it wasn't. He didn't fight for the title. Mm.
No, because Ray Mercer killed him.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Because he was going to get $4 million to fight somebody.
See,
and he says,
I would not have to go through all this if we didn't have all these stupid titles around the world.
Yo, you know what I was going to ask you, Harold, when Bert Sugar was on? I was going to ask you this. Do you believe that now, just now, presently, right now, the way boxing is, these championship fights should go 15 rounds?
Yeah.
Okay,
of course.
All right. Okay, yeah, I agree with that, too. Okay.
Because for one reason,
many times I've asked Pacquiao and Mayweather and Oscar and all them suckers, what about making this mega fight a 15-rounder? You know what Asim Rotman said to me? No, man,
right.
I can't go no 15 rounds, man. I mean, I can't be doing that.
What?
That's Asim Rotman. Exactly. Asim Rotman. And Holyfield said the same thing. I said, well, the commission brought it down to 12, so I feel comfortable with that. I said, oh, crap.
Holyfield like it because he know he can't go 15 rounds.
Oh, yeah, you know what I was going to tell Harold? Hey, Harold, I don't know, have you been hearing lately? I heard James Toney's coming back next month. Have you heard that?
Yeah, I heard that too, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
They're all coming back because they're picking up 3 and 4 million and 5 million because they're still
I'm thinking about coming back myself. I'm going to
shave
my damn shelf.
Come back, Harold.
I promote myself and then come back too.
That's right.
Yeah, come back and fight Duran and beat him so that Doc will be quiet.
Oh,
he thinks he's the greatest
right
thing.
I can beat De La Hoya and Oscar. I can beat even Bernard Hopkins. I mean, all that don't mean nothing. All that nonsense don't mean
nothing. That's Doc's boy right there, Duran.
Yeah. But,
Duran, but I mean, it's just come to the point now that it has to be structured. I mean, unless somebody... And that's the sad part about this. We don't have that group that really is going to take charge of this great sport under the wing. And we're letting all the other sports dominate it.
Mm-hmm.
And we have these foolishness people in the sport of boxing have no idea what boxing's about. Everybody came out of college or came out of high school and they had a few amateur fights and they think they know about boxing or they think they know what it takes to be a boxer or know how to create the sport. Don't get me wrong. The people that started this was criminals. Don't get me wrong.
Oh,
but
yeah.
They had a good blueprint.
Right.
And they made a good blueprint. Now we have to restructure, and we restructure. And now we come to the point now, making it good. But the foolishness that I'm looking at is this, 12 rounds, all these little rules that everybody putting in.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be 43 exact. You got to be 57 exact. No.
Yeah.
Let's have certain weights. That's what it is.
Oh, you mean the catch weight.
One champion. That's what it is. And let's deal with that. And you got 10 men in the division that
right.
are contenders. Let's stop the nonsense.
Yeah.
And that's what we have lost in our sport.
Harold, that's like we discussed this before, that comes with the weak-kneed political hack appointee commissions because, I go back a few years before you, Harold, and that commission was a dictatorship. I mean, they ran with an iron glove. If you spit in, on the sidewalk, the left side instead of the right side, as an example, man, they'll hang your ass, man. I mean, that's how tough it was. Right now, you got promoters who are managers and matchmakers. In those days, you were either a promoter, you were a matchmaker, or you were a manager. But you're not. You were not all of the three. And that's what these guys guys are walking around with titles in their back pocket, and one from column A, one from column B. They'll fight, but I'll still have the belt in my pocket. Now let's go back to the Margarito thing and Miguel.
But wait, Dusty, before you do that, let me just ask this question to you, you two guys. I mean, obviously, within the last 2-3 months, we've lost guys that are pretty much legends in the sport of boxing. I mean, we lost Joe Frazier, and we've lost a few other people in between as well. Like now, the great Angelo Dundee. Who's responsible now to carry the torch now that these guys are gone and make the change?
To carry the torch for these guys. Nobody. This is what I'm trying to make you understand. There's nobody. And there's nobody developing another Joe Frazier.
Right.
George Foreman has George Foreman the fifth, who's an undefeated 27 and 17 KO son.
Really?
I don't know where
the
hell is he fighting? What the hell is he fighting? We don't know.
I mean, he's 27 and 0.
He's knocking out sparring partners. That's
probably. But you got the commission, like I said, with the Margarito thing, with a not official lens, and they crossed their arms, and because of the sellout, and because of this, the man was allowed to fight. You notice that he walked around with thick suntan glasses.
The whole time.
The guy couldn't see his hand in front of him. They allowed him.
Mm-hmm.
My fear, compassion, was Margarito going blind. And here you have these guys just fighting, because the commission allows them. Why? Because the promoter is the ad hoc commission, and he's telling them what to do. And because they bring in the money, they bring in the fighters, they bring in this. Now, how are we going to correct this? Maybe what I just realized now. Miguel Cotto Mayweather had nothing to do with Bob Arum, because
mm-hmm.
Miguel Cotto says, I am a free agent. I didn't sign with anybody.
That's right.
So now you have Miguel Cotto Promotions, Mayweather Promotions, and Golden Boy Promotions. Three guys who work for Bob Arum, and they're by themselves. Maybe that's the deal there, for fighters to get some smarts, cut loose of the dude who's bleeding them dry and do their own promotion.
That's what Harold did. Look at Harold now.
Well, that's exactly what I'm trying to tell you. These are active fighters. Miguel said, and I quote, I am free to do and negotiate for fighters that I want to fight. God knows how many times he wanted to fight this fighter or that fighter, and Top Rank said, no, you're fighting the guy that we picked for you. And this is basically what the hell it is. When Arum went to the Philippines, one of the four guys on the list was, guess what? Miguel Cotto to fight Pacquiao again. I didn't want that garbage fight. I wanted what I just got, Mayweather and Cotto. And I am happy. This is a Christmas present for me.
Well, maybe that's what needs to happen more then. I mean, we need to see more of like what happened in Harold's era, where you had the top guys fighting each other. Maybe that's what needs to happen.
Well,
you know?
That's exactly what the
lady is. Can you name 10 top fighters now that would draw big crowd if they're not there anymore?
Yeah.
They draw the big crowd
guys,
in like you have.
Yeah, but except when these guys tell...
Dusty Harold, just quickly if I may ask, what was your initial thoughts when, I think it was the WBC or WA, I can't remember which one, when they went from 15 to 12, what was your immediate thought?
I cried tears. Believe me, symbolically, I cried tears. I said, this is punk shit, man. We got to go to 15 rounds. This is ridiculous. How the hell could... But you see, little by little, they threw in the 12 rounder because they injected the Olympic junior titles. And the junior titles, since they didn't have the impact of the regular weight classifications, they used to make them 12 rounds. And from now on, somebody made a stupid decision that every freaking title fight right now, junior or regular weight, was going to be 12 rounds.
Yeah, but
and
not for nothing. It's like Harold said, though. I mean, look at a fight. Look at two guys that were just great fighters. You look at a guy like the fight that we were just discussing, right? Hearns and,
yeah.
and Sugar Ray. That right there was that was it. That at the end, you saw Sugar Ray flourish at the end. But hey, those that was a championship fight. They gave it their all in the ring, and that's what you want to see as a fan.
But
okay?
you are now changing Pampers and breastfeeding and giving them Pablum with a 12-round fight.
Yeah, but you look at other sports too, like basketball. Can anyone name 10? That's another sport. That's why they have the problems that they have with the lockout and the revenue sharing.
All that nonsense.
When you had guys like Jordan and Pippen and all Ewing and all of those good guys playing, these guys now with tattoos all over the place.
Oh,
they
my
can't
Lord.
Talk.
What a
they're
disgusting.
Getting,
yeah.
They're getting locked up. They're getting into legal trouble. You didn't have that stuff 15 years ago.
Absolutely.
But
these
look
are
at,
guys
look
that
at,
came in. Right, came in, become athletes, professionals, and they built up that career. But now you don't have that. I mean, you know,
they coddle them. They coddle them. Look at even in the training camps. Like you look at these 360. They don't do the stuff like you did to develop your neck with the hammer. You know the old school technique with the hammer that you were saying. Harold fought with the flu. Nowadays they back out. Look at the Berto Ortiz fight. He got a little thing. He's not going to fight. Guys
well,
who have fought
tore,
that fight.
He tore bicep muscle. That's pretty serious. And what's so sad is that it'll be 6 weeks before he comes back. I mean, James Toney was going to fight Holyfield, I believe.
I don't care. I don't care. You got guys like Harold Weston that fought with the flu. I don't
heel,
care.
Man. Nobody wants with a torn Achilles heel.
James Toney is washed up, that guy. They stripped, ever since they stripped him of the title when he beat Ruiz, you don't hear of that guy. I mean, listen, Lady A, you remember, what fight was that we were at? Was that the Trinidad fight at Madison Square Garden that time?
Which one, the Trinidad?
When they were throwing the beer and all that stuff, or was that?
Oh, yeah, that was the John Ruiz fight. The John Ruiz fight
John
in Galata.
In Galata, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But you haven't seen any good fights like that. You haven't seen any good draws like that since.
Let me stop you. The reason why that was a good draw was because Don King had five great fights on that card. Right. On that card. That's why that was a good draw. Not so much because people actually came. Remember, if you remember, Holyfield fought that fight also, fought in that card also. So you had a lot of guys on that card that were.
But
you, know,
you don't have that
wanted,
anymore.
No, you don't.
You don't have
I mean, you look
anymore.
At you
That's
look at.
I,
let me see. What you got? Pacquiao. He's looking to probably hang it up in about another 2 years. Mayweather. I mean, how much longer is he gonna go on? But the heavyweight division has been
at the MGM.
But I think a lot of it also. But hold on, let me stop you also. And I don't know. I mean, Harold could chime in on this. I think that a lot of it also has to do with the cards they're putting together as well. Because with a lot of these cards, you wait. All this for the crescendo, for the final fight. You know, you're waiting for these two guys, these two gladiators to get in the ring, and their undercards are garbage, you know?
Well, that saves the promoter money. He brings Joe Cavett
back.
To me,
the way I look at it is this too, Dusty. Look at the fight, the last fight we went to. That was a good fight. The
a
one that we
card,
went
a
to.
Good,
right, because the undercard was good, and everybody was like all worked up, you know?
Yeah.
But I think a lot of it, too, has to do with the card. I don't know, Harold. What do
but
you think about
Don
that?
Is Don King still out there like he used to be? I mean, he's not even out there like he used to be.
I would defer that more to Harold, because Harold's a promoter, so.
But, no, he's out there. But the fact
point,
is that you have to understand that
let me hear what Harold
has
to say.
This is the way of the game today.
No, it's not
where
the way of the game. No, that's the problem with our world today.
Thank you. Tell me, Harold, what?
Change it. It was the way of the world. We'd be in 1800s, okay, if that's the way of the world. My point is that we make things in our society what should be right for everybody to feel comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
We are in the entertainment world, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Understand what I'm saying. Entertainment.
Right.
We entertain the public, not for the public.
Right,
and what
right.
we're doing in boxing, we're
frauding
the
Correct.
Public.
Exactly.
Because baseball, basketball, all them are competing against each other.
Mm-hmm.
We as boxing people that are in the entertainment world, this is what I'm saying, entertainment world, we're supposed to put compatible matches together.
Exactly.
So people could enjoy.
That's right.
And have fun. Life in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and some part of the 80s. But we have lost all that. And until we get back to that, if that does not happen in the next 5 to 10 years, boxing is dead.
Finished.
Well, okay. I agree with you in part, Harold, that they, in order to gain profits, the profit margin, they get a big main event, and they got scrubs to fill out a boxing card, you know. And this happens all the time. But the fact
No. You're not
that,
the public is starting to understand.
Let me finish.
You got to understand. You got the MMA. You got all this other activity. You now got this little sport that's coming along where the Romans are going down each other and going on horses and knocking each other off.
That's another
sport that's coming along. This is all combat that boxing has been. You can sit there and talk all that situation. If the trainers are not there and the competition is not there, then this sport of boxing is going to go out the window. And that's what I'm saying to you.
I agree with you.
But Harold, don't you think when you were boxing, I mean, it was people paid not to only see the actual match. They paid to see the boxes, because I think, in my opinion, when you boxed Tommy Hearns, Sugar Ray Leonard, it was all about the skill, the stamina, and the conditioning.
Right.
Nowadays, they don't have any pride in what they do to boxers these days. I mean, they didn't learn. Yeah, they don't seem to have learned from.
Discipline. It's discipline. It's discipline.
Like Dusty said back in the day, and like Hal said, it was the best fighting the best.
Yes.
Yeah. People today. I mean, people today, Lord, let's just say with the umbrella of boxing, fighters today, and this is where I make the comparison, this is what I'm telling, I mean, I agree with Harold in part, but I don't agree totally. But in boxing, I was a preliminary fighter. Okay, if I fought a four-rounder, God, man, I had $75, man, I hit the lottery. You fight a goddamn four-rounder today, that's $3,000 to $4,000. Boom. You fight a six rounder, you make a good $7,000 to $8,000. That's the difference. In order for me to break out of that four round and all that and make some decent or whatever better money, I had to be good. I had to be the best. Now, they will tell you, don't look too good sparring in the gym because them promoters will not match you. Crap, man. I train the way I train, to kill. And if that's the way you're going to hire me, that's good. I don't go chucking and jiving and playing around and not running today and then running 10 minutes tomorrow. That's bullcrap. I work like a dog to be the best. That's why I was the best, even though I got nowhere. I didn't get a contender stage or championships, but I was the best at what I was doing. The money is the one that you follow. But what I'm trying to finish up and saying that today. Let me just finish. What I'm trying to say today is that this was taken over by.
This concludes another edition of Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. We thank you for listening and encouraging you to tell a friend about Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. You can hear that and many other great programs on the Blake Radio Network. Have a great day.
All right, go ahead. Let's continue.
Yeah, today the dudes are spoiled. Today the trainers, forget the word trainer. The teachers are gone. These guys go in there and go to the commission's office. I want to be a trainer. And what did you do? Oh well, I boxed And I
how
and
much
I
is the license? I got the money. Did you take cash?
Right, exactly. You got a trainer's license to go out there and teach what? The blind leading the blind. But you have teachers, you know, and which are very few and far between today, that take a fighter and teach him from the ground up. Okay?
No, it's so amazing you say that. Before you start, Harold, I remember you and John Condon. I came by the office one day, and y'all had both came from Gleason's, and y'all said the same thing he said. You said, the blind leading the blind. Guys don't know. Let me say this, okay?
Look. My first professional fight, okay?
Mm-hmm.
First professional fight. I just won the 147-pound open class Golden Glove Championship.
Harold, let me interject.
No, let me finish.
You won the 47 Open. I won the 47 Open.
What, 1970?
Oh, my Lord. I'm getting goosebumps.
1907, Dusty won it. 1907.
Yeah,
you're the 7-0,
his 4-7. Oh, 47 Open? Man, that was a class, wasn't it, Harold?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, my.
My point is that when I won that championship, all right,
uh-huh.
I went. My first professional fight was in Syracuse, Pennsylvania. Okay,
mm-hmm.
I went up there and I got into the ring, and I thought I was fighting a 4-round fight. The people said 6 rounds. Okay, I looked around. I said I didn't know who my opponent was.
Exactly.
I ain't even seen him at the weigh-in. All right? I'm fighting in his hometown, Syracuse.
Uh-huh.
He was 6-0 in Syracuse.
Okay? 6-0. Wow.
All right? And then he weighed 157 pounds.
Damn.
I weighed 148.
Wow.
Okay? I whipped his butt. All right, my point is this. If you think you're that bad and you think you're that good, under the circumstances that we live in this society as we did in boxing. And let me tell you, y'all would know him, Duke Stefano, who was
I know. I have a history with that dude.
Duke came up to Syracuse, Pennsylvania, just to see me fight.
These guys kill me, bro.
All right. And when the fight was over, I looked at Duke. He said, I told these assholes they didn't know what they were doing.
But you know what? Even I think Mel Cosell would agree with me. When you look at wrestling, I was a big, avid fan of wrestling. You don't even have that anymore. I mean, it's turned to soap opera. Before you had,
your right seat. Pardon me for breaking in. But your right,
mm-hmm.
the difference and with that is, like you said, they've gone to. I mean, there's always been sports entertainment, okay. But the difference is now that they rely way more on entertainment than sport. I mean, seriously. I mean, big time injuries, big time pain. I mean, those old timers really laid each other out in there. I know everybody thinks that this is strictly entertainment, but that really was not the case. I mean,
you know, Mel Cosell, you
wrestling matches and they didn't speak.
I'm telling you
what I know. Right now, like you said, C-Wing, it's much more based on entertainment. Don't get me wrong, wrestling has always been entertainment. If we did high school or collegiate wrestling, the arenas would be empty, you know. Everybody then knows the moves and what have you, but we also did, we add color, and that was, you know, that's the job that pro wrestlers did. But even adding color, there's a certain amount of realism, a certain amount of, you know, actually a lot of real pain involved. These days, they do this, they count a lot more on, you know, interviews and hype as opposed to the actual wrestling. Just like everything else, folks are just going to probably do their best to, you know, get in and get out unscathed. I feel that as much as possible, put butts in the seat and go home. So it's much more of an entertainment event.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, real quickly, as we are going to close in a few minutes, and I want to get everybody's Super Bowl prediction, but we also so often talk about Mel Cosell, and, you know, you can't talk about Ali and Dundee and not somehow think of Howard Cosell. Let's go back to an interview with the doctor here, with none other than the man who's got a new book coming out now again, too, Howard Cosell, telling it like it is.
Howard, any predictions on this one?
No, no predictions at all. I have to see at fight time how the fighters are trained, what they each look like, and what I believe each of them really believes. It's premature to make a prediction.
Okay, Howard, it's been 3 years. In your estimation, why has it taken so long to get these two great fighters back in the ring?
Well, I think it was foolishness in the Frazier camp. George Foreman and forsake a $4.5 million gift. Just foolishness.
Howard, I talked to Muhammad earlier. He said, after Joe and George, he wants you.
Well, there's no contest in his own words. I could dance around him all night.
Hey, Howard Cosell laughing and joking there. And Howard hit a real good point, you know, where Joe ran toward Foreman and away from the title. We're going to start from the top. Saturday, you know, is the pre Sunday.
Briefly?
Go ahead, briefly.
Howard, you mentioned Duke Stefano. That sucker, I was his fair-haired boy. He got me fights in St. Nick's, Eastern Parkway, Sunnyside Garden, all that. All of a sudden, he dropped me like a hot potato and wouldn't even give me his face, man. Man, I chased him, and I think somebody got after him because I was beating everybody else, man. And all of a sudden, I couldn't get it. I couldn't even talk to the guy. He saw me in Stillman's. I said, "Hey, Duke, I got you." Like if he owed me money, man. And man, that's the guy. That's the dude that chased me out of the boxing game because that's the dude who by some pressure got me the four round in Yankee Stadium under the. Ray Robinson Basilio first fight, man, and he Sunday that Friday he took it away from me, man, and I wanted to kill the sucker, man. But anyway,
wasn't he the matchmaker, the assistant matchmaker, Harold?
Yes, he was.
Well, he did me wrong.
Huh?
Well, he did me wrong, that creep.
I know. Yeah, you got flashbacks to that guy like you got flashbacks of Manny Ramirez? Slow down, Pa.
Hey, Manny Ramirez, I'm glad you said that.
Hey, gang.
Manny Ramirez is a born-again Christian. Serious.
Coming back to Facebook. Hey, listen, Doc Stanley Sports.com. Okay. No, DocStanleySports.com is my site. I want everybody to take a look at that. They got a lot of sports memorabilia, not memorabilia, history there. So
I told you I'm
that
buying
site.
That bat for Manny Ramirez, not for Dusty.
Hey, Dusty, I don't think Dusty can afford it. But, gang, once again, DocStanleySports.com, check the site. As you know, I'm making my move to Fortaleza, 250 miles away from the equator, 85 degrees every day. Huh?
Take some of your junk with you.
Not, you know, hey, Dusty, my name ain't Duke, okay? You know what I mean? Uh-oh. Hey, Duke, maybe that's what you ought to name your mule.
Hasta gracias, my mule.
Hey, Doc, before we go off, could I ask Mel a quick question?
This is truth, there consequences. Hey, listen, call him up after we go. What's this question stuff? It's the Doc Stanley show, right? Now, what's happening? Lady A got to catch Harold. Harold got to talk to Dusty.
Yeah, because I...
Dusty
got
to talk
to him. Hold on. I got a gripe now. You made me wait the whole end of the show, man. I was trying to reach out to Harold, man. I want to find out what story was with the afros, man.
Hey, you start AT&T. Reach out and touch.
Man, come on, man.
Boy, I love you.
Listen,
you people are the greatest.
Was too high to box with God, you know?
Man, come on.
Okay. No, ask Mel that question, then we gotta wrap it. I want to get a Super Bowl. But go ahead, ask Lococo. Go ahead.
Mel, when you used to step into the square circle, who was your toughest opponent that you ever went up against?
Believe it or not, you're going to laugh. It actually occurred when I was in wrestling school, learning how to take those falls. I had a great teacher, a grizzled veteran, in the ring one time by the name of the unpredictable Johnny Rod.
Wow. Johnny Rod. Oh, my Lord.
Guys over. But I mean, the guy was like, I 5'11", 245 pounds of absolute steel. I mean, this could not move the guy. I mean, just a ring that knew all the tricks. A great teacher, a great teacher. So that I kind of just answer your question, believe it or not, kind of the wrestling mentor, the unpredictable Johnny Rod. I mean, the guy, you know, I just want to say this right quick. I know that's running out of time. Just because you see guys losing on TV, don't get the wrong idea. Guys are working. That's all I'm
going
to say. Just
wow,
because you guys lose a lot of matches on TV, don't get the idea that those guys are pushovers and they're working.
Boy, it's always an education here. One time, well, again, we're, those of you listening, this has been the tribute to the passing and memories of Angelo Dundee and Don Cornelius. Also, we talked a whole lot, got some inside information. Listen, Bert Sugar can say what he wants. Ain't nobody better than Willie Mays. You know what I mean? I mean, Babe Ruth wouldn't have been the youngest pitcher to the most wins had he been pitching against Satchel Paige, Max Manning, and Smokey Joe Woods. I'm with you, Hal. He didn't play against the best, so he can't be the best, but he was one of the great ones. Lady A, we're going to kick it off with you. Super Bowl, who wins this Sunday?
I like the Giants.
You got a score prediction?
No, I think. Why are you laughing? See, where's it so funny? I think they'll win. I think they'll win by a little, probably a field goal.
Mm-hmm. Oh, three wings. Okay. Who's going to win? You're the expert. Is the Giants or did Brady have a bad game, or is the Moss factor locking in and Brady's no longer Brady?
Moss factor locking in. Wes Welker won't be the same. The Giants will attack him. If he does play, they'll tackle him midsection and drop hard on that ankle. 27-19 Giants.
Wow. Harold Weston Jr.
Blowout. Don't make no difference. I speak what I say I want to speak. I bet what I do I'm going to bet. And believe me, I ain't even worried about this. I don't even want the point spread. I just want this Giants.
J-I-A-N-T-S. Mel Cosell. Been talking all year about your boy, Pierre. You can read me. They're the best team in football on both sides of the football. Talk to me. Who wins this thing?
Well, Doc, I have this being, believe it or not, a shootout with a relatively low score. I have a 28-21 Giants. I have it being, believe it or not, 28-21 with a lot of yards by both teams on the ground, but a lot of bend and don't break in the red zone. If the Giants rush for between 75 and 100 yards, they win this game going away. And like I said, look out for Jason Pierre-Paul on that defensive line.
Hey, Doc, won't the station give whoever gives the best score close of being a blowout or close score will get a dinner out for two? I mean, can we do that with the station?
Yeah,
quiet.
I think
there.
So. But you know what? I'll let you know. I mean, listen, we can do that, but you're going to go to a spot where they're going to say you want to supersize it or not, baby. You know what I mean?
No. It don't make no difference.
No, what
would you
let
like to go to McDonald's?
I say White Castle.
Right, listen, you're the champ. You're the champ. I'll go anywhere with you. How's that? You're the champ.
Okay.
I'm going to be down if I can get a Happy Meal.
Mike,
okay.
I say you go to Arthur Treacher's.
Oh my God, that's old school.
Everybody got their own opinion about how the score's going to be, but who comes closest to what the score's going to be on their mark? I mean, would the station say, okay, we will take up that person, and with another person, dinner.
Yeah, Hal, I can see your move right now, baby. Hal, got dinner for two already plotted.
Hey, I'm just asking a question.
Yeah. I will check.
Already planned. I can see the station planning for us to take a selection.
Okay. I think Hal got his eyes on Peter Lugas. That's what I say.
There we go. Peter Lugas at Williamsburg.
You mean Peter Luger Jr. Okay, well, Dusty.
Well,
give it to us.
On a very serious note, it's a pick'em. It's a pick'em fight. If you think the Patriots are going to lay down, no, they're not. They're going to give it the best. But the momentum is in the Giants' side because they are a vicious road team. And Eli is in full gear, and Brady has been injured, and he gets rattled. So what am I going to say? What am I saying? With no score, the edge goes to the Giants. I won't be surprised if the Patriots beat them. No, I'm not going to go into points because if I go into points, it's going to be a low score. It's going to be a low score.
I'm going 10 points. I'm saying Giants are going to win by 10.
The Giants will win by 10? Probably, yeah. You're probably right. Maybe the Patriots will get two touchdowns and the Giants will get 4 or 5. But that's the way I see it. Remember, he's playing. Eli is playing the odds. He's going to his short man, the press snatcher, then he's going to his wide receivers. Then he's going to his tight end. And then he's going to his running backs. He used Brandon Marshall in the last game as a wide receiver. Remember that play? And he got a first down. So he's going to play the odds.
You're messing my dinner day with Lady A, man. Yeah. Please, Jesus.
A field goal, a field goal.
Exactly.
See,
no, he's not going to score.
Dusty, see, was, by the time Dusty was through, the Super Bowl would have been over, so
Dusty
everybody would have lost.
All up.
hey, here's the deal. Hey, Dusty, here's what we're going to do, Dusty.
Yeah, go ahead.
If the Patriots win, next Sunday we're all at your house for dinner.
Yeah, I'll put a little spread, take away Roscoe's food and put it up there.
Oh, good night, everybody.
Good night. Good night. Take care. God bless.
Good night.
Good night.
Y'all be good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Later.
Check out Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, where you'll hear talk radio at its best, featuring entertainment, sports, nutrition, Africana studies, holistic healing, and celebrities. Listen to Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, where you'll hear talk radio at its best. Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul.
This concludes another edition of Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. We thank you for listening and encouraging you to tell a friend about Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. You can hear that and many other great programs on the Blake Radio Network. Have a great day.